The Best of Times Radio Hour, live on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel, a show dedicated to seniors and boomers in Northwest Louisiana. Here's your host, Gary Kaligas.
Good morning, radio listeners. I'm Gary Kaligas, the publisher of The Best of Times, the only magazine and radio show for mature adults in Northwest Louisiana. I do thank you for tuning in to our show today. Also, thanking those who might be listening via the internet at www.710keel.com. Also, thanking those who might be listening via the Keel application on their Apple or Android devices. We also want to thank those who might be listening via the podcast of the Best of Times Radio Hour on Apple Podcast or via our website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com. We want to thank AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer for being the exclusive sponsors of this radio show. In just a few minutes, we're going to discuss some of the many legal issues that seniors should consider now, and also about important legal documents that one needs to have now. So stay tuned to the show for some very beneficial information for you and your loved ones. It is Saturday, February the 8th, and we are broadcasting our show from the studios of News Radio 710 Kiel and 101.7 FM, a Town Square media station here in wonderful Shreveport, Louisiana. However, today's show has been pre-recorded, so we will be unable to accept call-in questions and comments from our loyal radio listeners. Be sure to pick up the February issue of the Best of Times at one of our 270 distribution locations. We thank you for the many compliments about our magazine. We do appreciate hearing from you. Remember, if you're unable to find a printed copy, you can always visit our popular website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com to view both current and past issues. You can listen to previously broadcast radio shows here on the Best of Times Radio Hour. You can view the current 2024 Silver Pages. In addition, you can learn about upcoming events throughout our particular area. Speaking of Silver Pages, we are about to release our 2025 issue of Silver Pages Senior Resource Directory, the only senior resource directory in Northwest Louisiana for the past 22 years. Of course, it's our most popular publication with seniors, boomers, and their family members, and many, many others to find needed services, products, and information. It will be available at our 270 distribution locations, or you can view it and download it from our website at thebestoftimesnews.com or via our app on Silver Pages. Again, it will be released March the 1st of 2025. Each and every month, the Best of Times sends out a TBT newsletter via e-blast to over 73,000 email addresses of seniors and boomers. It provides them with links to read our current issue, but also our current Silver Pages. In addition, there are many additional educational articles that are not found in our magazine that we do place on our TBT newsletter. In addition, there's a contest and there's lots of news that you can use in upcoming events that you might want to participate in. Joining me, the thousands who are receiving our free newsletter via their email address. It's free of charge. Just go to our website, thebestoftimesnews.com, to subscribe free of charge by giving us your email address, and you'll start to receive this particular newsletter each and every month. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Kiel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and eBears, Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and eBears, Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. Joining me on my show today is a special guest, Mr. Kyle Moore, elder law attorney, and Ms. Vicki Rich, who is the client care coordinator with the law firm of Weems, Champagne, Shimwell, and Moore. I've asked him to come on my show to discuss some senior issues that need to be considered now or definitely in the near future. And also, we're going to discuss some various legal documents that one should already have or planning to obtain or plan to update. So thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Vicki, for joining us today here on the Best of Times Radio Hour.
Good morning, Gary. Good to see you again, as always.
Thank you a lot, sir. How are you liking your new location?
Yeah, 9105 Ellerby Road. It's we're set to celebrate our second anniversary there. We got there in June of 2023.
You've been there 2 years. Wow.
Yeah, so
time flies when it's having fun there.
Right. I visited took the first year just to make sure that we got everything unpacked and we found everything and get settled in. So, but it's been very positive. We've had a great feedback from the clients. While we're not far from our old location, it's very easy to get in and out of. It's a transition has been nice.
Easy parking, one floor, right. No pull stairs to climb, no elevators to go on. So
that's very user friendly for my clientele.
Yeah,
and so it's been great to have everybody out there. So we still have some people that still look for us over at 912 Kings. Everybody know that we're out there on our new location, 9105 okay. Ellerby Road. Yeah.
So do you still feel the need to tell seniors and boomers and even young people that there's a tremendous need to have a valid will, especially in the state of Louisiana? Is that true?
Absolutely. And, it's as practitioners, we deal with it day in and day out, but we always run across somebody who is thinking about it, looking into it, and I get questions about it from friends and people who bump into, and they ask me that, do I need a will? And I give them my canned answer that sure, if everybody needs one, and so whether or not that it will how it will impact your family dynamic, the devils are always in the details of those things. But it is a great thing to have your affairs in order and have a plan of action in case something, and when it does happen to you, whether that's setting up your affairs in dealing with incapacity or health issues or passing, when you die. And so it's always better to leave that in a way, in a manner that is organized, intentional, and effectuate the plan for your family instead of leaving chaos and confusion. And so in some families that can, that may be a very simple thing. Just one child and very great relationship and no issues there. And sometimes it can be a very complicated when you have blended families, second, third marriages, you have stepchildren and families that you've blended over the years and you want to share assets together. And so it is something that comes up very often. And I think the biggest thing that I get with younger group married people is that in Louisiana, spouses do not inherit 100% upon passing. That, we come from our civilian Napoleonic law that heirship stays in the bloodline. Children inherit from their parents, and we have some remnants of forced heirship in Louisiana. So those things that are specific to Louisiana that people who moved into Louisiana from out of state or have found their way here need to realize that our laws are set up different, so that maybe you came from a state that had that the spouses would inherit 100% upon the death of a spouse, and other states those rules are different. So it's always good to learn and spend time to educate yourself about what the law is, and then you can make some educated decisions about your estate planning, how sophisticated or simple that needs to be compared to your family. And so that's always a good starting point. Is I think it's always worth your time and money to figure that out.
So let's emphasize that point. I never thought of that until you brought it up, that if somebody, let's say a loved one, a grandmother, grandfather, moved from Ohio to Louisiana, they have their will in Ohio, and they come to Louisiana, it may not be valid in this state.
Yeah, so the legality of the will itself. So we deal with that, and we oftentimes will probate wills from other states. And the general rule is that if it's valid in the state it was created, mm-hmm. then we will respect the validity of that in Louisiana. So the full faith and credit. So we respect other people's laws, and okay. they will respect ours. And so the state specific implications of the assets that are owned inside Louisiana, our laws will control that. So if you have a bequest that leaves 100% of your assets to a spouse and you happen to have a child that is legally declared a forced heir in Louisiana, our forced heirship laws will be implied to that estate.
Will supersede the
way it has impact.
Okay, it does.
Yeah, so it needs to be, and oftentimes when people ask me that, when they sign estate planning with me, they said, well, Kyle, what if I move to Texas? Am I going to have to do all of this all over again? Mm-hmm. And I tell them, no, you probably will not have to do that in a situation, but you need to sit down with a practitioner in that state that knows those state rules and have them look at and educate you about, is there any impact on any state-specific rules? And right. And that, I encourage people who move in the same way, that in the end, the legal effect may not have any true difference in your family, but it could and could be a big issue if you have a specific situation where that could be different than what you intended. Now, you know, because other states, the trend is to stay out of probate court, you know, and that is the estate planning
And legal why field. Why is that? I want you to explain to our listeners why stay out of probate court.
Because the courts are clogged with other issues. They have a lot of contested legal matters that need a court appearance and court hearings. And so things that are straightforward, easy to deal with, that we don't need to bog down the court system with these transfers of assets when we can do those things through beneficiary designations or pay on death designations. And sometimes in deeds in other states, you can leave a surviving owner. You can inherit through a deed where you acquire with spouse with rights of survivorship is what they deem that stuff. And so that way you can pass assets at death without having to go get court permission and court authority to do that stuff. And so the trend is, you know, life insurance, retirement accounts, IRAs and 401ks and annuities and these products. And you can designate pay on death on certain bank accounts and CDs and things at the bank. You can leave pay on death and transfer on death. And they have specific rules on how to do that. And you have to get the formalities correct. But you can still do that in Louisiana. And so with that, you can, you know, right now you can pass a lot of that wealth outside of needing to have probate. And so, but things like your real estate, your home, land that has title issues, those things are probably the biggest triggers of needing a succession or probating a will in Louisiana are title issues to real estate. And so and people who have homes and ownerships of homes, that's where it becomes even more important, you know, that if you have several children that live all over the country and state, you may need somebody to designate that person in a will to be your executor, to handle your affairs locally, and that will take responsibility to make sure that gets done. So all of those things that factor in important to why just getting your estate plan in order. And then, as we always, you know, the first thing we covered back when we started talking about this is let that person know, right?
That's right.
That, you know, we always tell the stories that you have your executor, but you never tell them that you've asked them to be the executor of your estate. And then they get the call from the lawyer that says, hey, mom designated you. And it's like, oh, I did? You know, so.
Do I really have to do this?
Right. What does that mean? What am I to be?
What am I to do? And I'm out of town. Do I have to fly back and forth to handle this particular item?
Right. And so, so it, all of that, and what I read is in an article, phrased it as leaving a, it's not a, doing your estate planning is really, is a gift. It's a gift of having it organized and having it put together so that while the family is grieving, they're not surprised, they're not caught off guard, they know exactly what they're asked of them to do and how to handle those affairs. And so in looking at it that way is that you're taking that burden off of the kids or whoever the heirs are, that you're doing that for them. I think it helps couch that, because nobody wants to think about death and dying. You know, that's the, you know, you sign the will, and then inevitably something bad's going to happen, you know. But it is just getting your business, your affairs, just like you go meet with your financial planner and you get your finances in order, your estate and how that's going to be left for a spouse or children. And, you know, that's all part of that and needs to be looked at and designated that way.
But let's talk about some of the reasons. I'm sure people are saying, you know, why do I need one? I have a very simple estate. I have a home, a car. And I, you know, I might have six kids, but they're all grown up now, and I'm all alone now. Why do I need a will? Can I just, when I die, everything's divided? Is that true or not?
Yeah. So if it's just you and you have your children, and generally that is the law of Louisiana that your heirs will inherit equally amongst your children. So that very well is the truth. You know, so
but again, without a legal document, they're going to have to find an attorney that will handle the estate. Even may they be one piece of property, one car, furnishings, whatever, and it, right?
That's right. You still need to have the legal, what we call succession, or is the legal transfer of the assets of a deceased estate to the rightful heirs, and whether that's by law or through the will. That process has to be documented so that the title attorneys and the banks and third parties that are holding these assets, the DMV, you know, all of these where you need to transfer title, they need to have some legal document that says who the rightful owner is now. So this person is deceased. Who is the rightful owner? Who do I have the right to transfer this to? And so that's what.
And if the mother or father who's single didn't designate an executor, that's going to have to be done by some, by court or whatever, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And so if you
don't
have a will.
That causes money. You're going to have to go up before the court. You're going to list all the six the siblings here. And
then you have to go get and collect all of those signatures from all of the people so that you can get somebody with authority to handle these routine things that if you had just written that down and said, I want, you know, child A to do the job and let Johnny do it, and that he will then take care of everything and disperse out the assets to the remaining five, then, again, it just helps bring, you know, clarity to the situation and makes it easy, friendly.
Oh, a follow-up question, which I know somebody asked me, and I forgot to ask you this, I think the last time. Can the individual's husband or wife who has an attorney say, I don't want to. I want the lawyer to be my executor. Can a lawyer be the executor of an account?
Sure. That sometimes people want their attorney who's familiar with their family to handle those for them. And so it is the client's right. You know,
it's not a conflict of interest, even though he or she wrote the will, did all that, they can also implement it.
That's right. And so obviously, that, you know, again, client choice, and that we often ask that if there's other family members or options, because you are entitled as an executor, you know, that to a fee. And so lawyers charge their time, and how they make their living. And so obviously, if you have a pretty straightforward estate, most of the time the children or the heirs will act as an executor for free. You know, I mean, they're right. Vested, they're part of the inheritance, and so they're not going to charge to do that job. And so it does keep the expenses of the administration down in a straightforward process. So obviously, but yeah, attorneys can do that. Outside family members, CPAs, I mean, any, you know, it's really as the people that know the family that you would trust and responsible enough to carry out the wishes. And that's really what we look for and advise. And if that's a family member, that's great. If that's not, then we go to option two.
And one thing I think you did and reminded me many years ago, you need to always have a backup, because that individual could be pass away or move out of the area. And so that's make sure you have at least one backup, maybe sometimes two backups.
That's right. And I asked that of all the clients, and because I learned early on that we had a family member, and the mom was, you know, they had that firstborn, that she did everything for the family and was the responsible one. And unfortunately, he ended up passing before her. And so we were left, again, with nobody designated, because all, you know, it was him that was the designated one, and so we didn't have a backup plan. And so some people have those people that they can name, and some people they don't. But it's good to, I always, if they are there, if they would be in the room with the lawyer, or they're going to be at the hospital, you know, dealing with the issues, it's better to have their name in the document, even if it's just a backup role, so that you're always protected. Okay. You know.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Tending Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM at 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears, Standing Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. Joining me on my radio show today are two important guests, Mr. Kyle Moore, the elder law attorney, and Vicki Retsch is the client care coordinator with the law firm of Weems, Shimp, Haynes, and Moore. And they're on my show to discuss some senior issues that need to be considered now and definitely in the future. And also we're going to now discuss some legal documents that you should have already prepared and obtained and possibly updated. So again, thank you for joining us today here on the Best of Times Radio Hour.
Thanks, Gary.
So let's talk a little bit. One more thing. I had some individual telling me that that should their will have their funeral instructions. What do you say about that?
That was a pretty typical thing to see in wills years ago, probably 20, 30 years ago, that it all was encompassing. So you sat down with a lawyer and you mapped out the disposition of the assets, as well as funeral plans, and you could have all kind of instruction language in there. I have taken on the theory that to keep those things separate and apart, that I like to have that, because it could have some personal detail, and your will, when it's probated, will become a public record. So file the will of public record, and it is out there. In the age of technology. And so you may have specific songs and burial, and you might like this preacher or pastor or to have, say, these verses. So things of that nature that are more, I can say, subject to being changed, or that you may not want to have out there for the whole world. Do a separate affidavit and like to have those kind of personal details. It's still valid and enforceable.
It's
still witnessed and notarized. But it, unless it's ever challenged, it never really has to come forth and be part of a legal proceeding.
Excellent. Yeah. So the other important documents that seniors need to have, and others, is a medical power of attorney. So explain that to our listeners and what the difference of that is, an administrative one.
Right. And so, you know, we always call it the big three, right? You have your will, last will and testament that handles the disposition of your assets at death. Then you have your power of attorney that designates your agent upon incapacity or when you need those persons to act and you can't act for yourself. And then the third is the advanced directive or living will, which is really tailored to the end of life decision making. And so a very key element, people say, oh, well, I need a will. And I said, well, do you have a power of attorney? And it's like, well, why would I need that? I can handle my own affairs. I said, well, we have to assume, just like you're going to pass one day, you may become incapacitated and can't make those decisions for yourself. And so that is absolutely when you need somebody that you trust that to act for you. And so documenting that in a power of attorney is very important. And we want to do those in advance because you need capacity to sign those documents. So people can't wait until you become incapacitated. That's the problem. And so a big concern is that I'm delegating or giving up authority or rights by signing a document now when I don't need it into the future. And so, and I have to, you know, advise people that this is a personal document and it's fully revocable at any time. So just because you sign a power of attorney, you're not giving up rights. It's just delegating rights that you have until it either you pass and the power of attorney becomes null and void, or you revoke it. And so you can always legally revoke and change your power of attorney at any time. But it is an important document to have because, again, you're dealing with these people out in the world, and they want to know, if I can't speak to you because of your incapacity, then who has the legal authority? Who do I have as the doctor, as the banker, the finance guy? Who do I have right to talk to and disclose information to in this new, you know, this world? And so these power of attorneys have become very important to get your affairs handled when you can no longer do them for yourself.
Okay, so here's the scenario that I hear individuals saying. Well, my husband and wife are driving in a car. We're having a car accident, and she becomes severely ill and injured, and she can't act on herself. Well, I'm the husband. Can I be the medical power of her to make the medical decisions for my wife? Do I need a document to say that?
So in the medical field, there is in our laws that says if a person cannot make their health care choices, that we have in the law and the statute that hierarchy.
Okay, so
spouse, then children, you know, so there is that because of the importance of the healthcare decision, and especially in a emergent situation, okay, the doctors are going to deal with the spouse. What becomes the problem, and there's no such correlation in the financial world because all of those are not in the medical field of getting you treated.
Oh, okay.
But in the financial world, we don't have that list of hierarchy. And so we have to then go to have a interdiction or a guardianship proceeding if you do not have that designating in writing, to go get a judge to tell us who has the rightful authority to make decisions for somebody who becomes incapacitated.
Wow.
And like everything else, court proceedings, you involve lawyers, and that just time and money that really is unnecessary if you just had that written out that has spouse first, then one or more of the children as the backup to that. And so are those important people that you would trust to help you, having that laid out in the document. And so we do have, and those can be different people for the financial decisions and different for the medical decisions. And so you can have either one general power of attorney that covers those healthcare and financial matters all in one, or you can have separate. You can have a financial power of attorney, and these people will handle that. And then the medical decision making, you can have another set of people. So they can work together, and you can have two different power of attorneys if you need that for your particular family. And so, again, that they all just need to be educated about what their roles are and what you expect of them, you know, when you designate these people. And so most of the time we sign them early on. They're part of your financial, your estate plan, and then they could just sit in your, you know, your cabinet at home, in your business office at home, and never see the light of day. So you may never need it. But if you do, they can save a lot of time and money trying to help get some things done if you become incapacitated.
And the critical thing is, if they have to go in their nursing home when they're in their Alzheimer's unit and they get dementia and they can't make these decisions later, it's going to be very difficult, right?
That's exactly right. It says that we see that a lot, that people reach out once they have been diagnosed. You know, they have something of urgency now that, now I need to get my affairs in order. So it is that when they know that a dementia diagnosis has been made and that incapacity is coming. So that is, you know, that if you have that warning and that time to prepare, that's great. But sometimes things can happen in life that are not just as gives you that, I can set this appointment 2 weeks and go see the lawyer and we can go sit down and go over all of this. So when things are settled, that is the time to start organizing these things and getting them in advance so that you have it planned. And then again, you can put it in the drawer and leave it alone and you'll be good.
And so the other interesting one is about the living will, which if anybody has been admitted to a hospital lately, that's the first things they ask you. Do you have your living will? Do you have your living will with you, or can you get it, right?
That's right. And so they want to know, have you designated a medical power of attorney, and do you have your living will? And
tell them why that's important.
Because in any situation where that you would get admitted and could have some medical issue where that could come up, where you have to have somebody to make medical decisions for you, and or you may face end of life, to have it part of your file. So they're wanting to have it as a chart that they can check the box that it's in there, so that if you find your way in needing that and the doctors have come to you, they can go to the chart and say, okay, yes, they have a living will. What does it say? And they can administer what your directions are. So it has just been commonplace nowadays that as you go to see your physicians or admit for procedures, ask you to have those on file. Again, if it's something pretty routine, I tell people that as long as you have it and you've designated and your medical power of attorney knows the situation, that they're ready to act in case, then having it submitted every time you go to have some type of procedure done, I think it's, I can live without having to do that every time. But I do say that as long as you've got it in place and they know that they may, they have it and they're willing to act for you, then that's the most important, is that you have it. Not that you have part of your chart. It's that you can say that you do have it and they know that they're there to act for you.
Good point. One more quick thing before we go to break is about changes. I deal with so many people that said they had their will 25 years ago and never looked at it. People should periodically review their will, their power of attorneys, and their living will periodically, correct?
Sure. I tell people, it all, when we do this, when we do our estate planning as young adults and we have young children and lots of debt, then, that estate plan may look a lot different than as we mature and we've worked and our kids are grown and we've built our retirement funds and now we have a different financial situation. So for sure that they don't legally expire because of age, but again, the people that you may have had when you had minor children that you needed a sibling to act for, for you and or your parent, now that your children are of age and a maturity level, that they can assume those roles. So, those life events as you cross over just every 5 years, some people can go 10 years, they have that situation when
and
you
critical
go from,
things like your executor might have passed or
that's right.
become disabled or has dementia, et cetera. Those can, seriously affect it. So you need to update those particular items.
Absolutely. If you have any of those people in your life that are going through their issues and you need to review that's a great time to just to make sure that everything is still okay. And then again, if any changes, it's a lot easier to amend and update than it is to start from scratch. So.
Well, I'm going to compliment you. Of course, transparency, I'll mention that Kyle and his staff did mine and my wife, and it's remarkable. We've updated it and changed it for many years, but I want to say that I've seen some people's wills that were so specific. And I was going to ask you this. If you list a particular property exactly in there and you don't have the clause, if I still own it, what happens if it's still in there and they say, I own the place on Riley Lane and you no longer own it?
Yeah, so yeah,
that becomes a little bit precarious, huh?
Well, and that causes confusion more than anything, and the legal effect is it's called a lapsed legacy. So it just is treated if you no longer own it, that it just falls away. But that is the problem with you get into too many specifics about bank accounts or particular items that I want this golf club set to go to this child or this watch to go to this child, that you may have disposed of it way before that, that you passed or given it away or changed your mind. And so we have this now to deal with and explain to Johnny why he's not getting the golf clubs.
Oh, the shotgun, et cetera. We've talked about it. Yes.
That's right. So. But, so we, we try to keep it unless there's a really good reason or need to have that in there because of that nature. We generally try to stay specific, you know, try to stay broad and not get specific in the wills unless we really need to.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and Ebairston & Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM at 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and Ebairston & Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. Joining me on my show today is Mr. Kyle Moore, elder law attorney, and Ms. Vicki Rich, who is the client care coordinator with the law firm of Weems, Shemp, Haynes, and Moore. And they're on our show to discuss some senior issues that need to be considered now or definitely in the near future. So thank you for taking time to be on our show today. So let's talk a little bit about a hopefully better utilized veterans health care benefits with Vicki. Ms. Vicki, would you explain that to our listeners?
Well, sure. A benefit that we deal with a lot in our long-term care planning besides Medicaid is a non-service connected pension, and then it's additional allowances called either housebound or aid in attendance. So a veteran who had served at least 90 consecutive days, one day being during a time of declared war, could be eligible for this pension, and his widow when he passes away. So the base pension is the true pension. So to be eligible for that, a person has to be over the age of 65 or permanently and totally disabled. And then once they qualify for a base pension, if they have a permanent and totally disabling condition that causes them to need assistance with at least two activities of daily living, then they could qualify for what's called an aid in attendance allowance on top of the base pension. So those activities of daily living that the VA specifically looks for are things such as mobility, getting in and out of bed, walking to the dining room if you're at assisted living or in your home, bathing, dressing, feeding, like if somebody's had a stroke and they can't cook their meal, but they if somebody needs to cut up their food or even provide them feeding through like a peg tube, that's assistance for feeding. Some instrumental activities of daily living that's not considered as these two qualifying activities are driving, meal preparation, medication management. So as long as a veteran or their widow needs assistance with those two activities of daily living, or if they're permanently blind, almost blind, or living in a skilled nursing facility and in need of a protective environment, they could qualify for that particular allowance.
So the allowance is given to them directly to pay for the services?
Correct.
Where can they be performed?
Yeah. So a person could qualify for this pension whether they're at home, or if they live in an assisted living facility, or even an independent living facility, or if they live in a nursing home. So it just depends on their medical expenses. So the first criteria is, you know, that the veteran served during that period of war. And the next criteria is medically, do they need the two activities of daily living or that safe environment? And then the third one is resource-based. So the couple or the veteran himself or the widow of the veteran, their assets have to be less than $159,000, okay? And then, but some assets that the VA doesn't count to say, okay, what's considered in the $159,000? Well, the house that they live on and the lot, or up to 2 acres, is not a countable asset.
Oh, okay.
Their vehicle that they drive to get to medical appointments or whatever, that's not countable. And usually some burial insurance is not countable. So anything else, you know, their brokerage accounts, IRAs, anything like that, that's counted as an asset in considering that $159,000. And then they look at the income. If the veteran's income is enough to pay for all the medical expenses and their living expenses, then they don't qualify. So they've got a formula for that. But typically when we have people that say they have dementia or they've had strokes or something and they want to stay home, then they might hire companions.
Right.
So the Department of Veterans Affairs does consider the companion care to be a medical expense, whereas Medicaid does not. They only look at nursing home. So this is a way that our veterans and their widows can stay home longer and age in place. And they can have a more secure environment because they've got companions or even family members coming in to take care of them. So for 2025, a single veteran may be eligible to get up to $2,358 per month. Wow. From the VA to pay for that, to help pay for those extra expenses. Or a married veteran is $2,795 a month. A widow is $1,515 a month. So as you can see, if they're using that at home to bring in sitters, you know, if I have had a stroke and I need 24-hour care, it's going to cost a lot of money. But if the VA is going to give me and my husband $2,358 a month, that's going to allow me to stretch my dollars to also pay for my lawn care, my housekeeping, and all those other things that aren't considered to be reimbursable. So we love to use this pension and tell people about it just because, you know, a veteran has served during the time of war, those 90 consecutive days, so they have earned that particular pension.
And mention, it's not just, I just had somebody ask me, well, I'm not eligible because my husband didn't serve in World War II, but he served in Vietnam War, and that's
right.
that's a legitimate war. Right?
Exactly, yeah. So whenever Congress has declared these times of war.
Korean War, the various wars.
Korean War, veteran, and there's still, you know, the Gulf War. So, and with the newer veterans and in the Gulf times, there is a longer time period that they would have had to serve during the war period. But all those are, all that information is on that va.gov on the internet. So people can get on their computer and kind of see what they might be eligible for and just read about these different pensions and allowances.
So what do you provide for clients who might want to contact you to see if they qualify and you do all the things? There's a lot of paperwork involved.
There is. And typically when we're doing long-term care planning for people, they're coming in to think, hey, long-term, I don't have long-term care insurance. How am I going to pay for my nursing home care? And we're very happy to tell them that, hey, you're a veteran. Let me look at your discharge papers and see, you know, is this an eligible time period? Kyle is a VA accredited attorney, so he's on the website, the Office of General Counsel website, to say he can help, our office can help with an application. But when we're looking at this, it kind of dovetails with that Medicaid benefit because, of course, it's a fixed amount per month, that $2,358 or that $1,515. So if a person transitions to actually a nursing home, as you know, that cost can go up to $8,000 a month. So that VA pension might not, you know, cover that entire amount. Then we look at how can we access Medicaid benefits.
Okay. Well, the other question I have regarding that people still don't understand is their spouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
The
right.
spouse has the applicant mm-hmm. can utilize.
Right.
I can tell you many spouses of veterans don't think about it.
Right. So the veteran is always the applicant unless he has passed away. He's the claimant. But if he's passed away, the widow can make an application based on her husband's wartime. Or sometimes women are, you know, veterans too. So I don't want to discriminate there. But yes, so the veteran is always the claimant. But even though the veteran may not have his disabling condition, if his and his wife's, his living wife, has medical expenses together that reduce their income enough, then they may be eligible for that married veteran pension. And allowance of the aid in attendance.
Well, that's good. So has it been utilized more and more? I mean, after many years, back in the days, it wasn't being utilized.
Right. Well, 20 years ago when I got into this at the law firm, you know, it was the government's best kept secret. But people really now more about it. And then also there are, you know, veterans that are eligible to go to the veterans home, the North Louisiana veterans home that may not have actually served during these particular times of war, may have been in between, and they are eligible to live at the veterans home if they need nursing home care.
So everyone, if you have any questions or you might be possibility, you or a loved one might be qualified, Do call them at 222-2100. That's right, 222-2100. So, and also let's talk a little bit about Medicaid long-term care coverage.
Right.
How to get that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, again, this is a thing that people really fear. How are they going to pay for their long-term care? People sometimes are under the belief that Medicare is going to pay for everything they need. Medicare does not. Medicare only pays up to 100 days of skilled nursing per year per person. So if a person has a disabling condition that is rehabable, they can go to a skilled nursing facility. Medicare will pay 100% of that skilled nursing, PT, OT, speech, skilled nursing care, up to 20 days. Days 21 through 100, there's a copay. So either Medicare pays 80%, and their private insurance pays 20%, or if they have no other health care, then they pay 20% out of pocket. Or if they have, you know, these advantage plans, then there's a copay for that. But what if they become custodial care? A lot of times you can rehab but still can't go home 24 hours. You need 24-hour care, and that's just far too costly. So for a single person, you know, their assets can only be up to $2,000. Again, they have these excluded assets not included in their eligibility, which is the house, as long as they have intent to return to it, a vehicle, and burial or life insurance up to $10,000. A married couple can have up to $157,920 of assets outside of their home, one vehicle, and the burial. So people can be eligible and not know it. We've had people that, unfortunately, we had this couple that they thought they had to take out a reverse mortgage on their house because he had a stroke, was in the nursing home for over a year, and somehow they never asked the nursing home, how can I qualify for Medicaid? So by the time he passed, she had this reverse mortgage, and she really didn't have any equity left in her house. And then she was needing assisted living care. So it was just really, it could have been very helpful if she would have just applied for Medicaid and not gotten that reverse mortgage.
Okay, again, our listeners, if you consider that, do call them. They're experts on them. They've done it for many thousands of clients, so they can definitely help you as well. The phone number is 222-2100, or their website is www.weems, that's weems-law.com. Again, that's weems-law.com. Or call them at 222-2100. Well, thank you again for joining us today on the Best of Times Radio Hour. You've given us, all of our listeners out there in the Arklatex, a lot of great information, and continuing to provide great services to all these clients that have need in the area legally, and as well as long-term care coverage, as well as Medicare and veteran benefits. I'm glad that you and others are still promoting it in the area, because I've thought for many years it was not being done. When I was a home health care administrator, very few people applied for it, and we were not allowed to. We had to refer them to the VA office to file, and the paperwork was inundated. It was tremendous, and now we have firms that can help them and do that as well. So thank you for joining us today. You were wonderful again, and thank you a lot.
Thanks for having us, Gary. Appreciate it always.
Join us next Saturday for another show that could benefit you or your loved ones. Don't forget to pick a personal copy of The Best of Times at one of our 270 distribution locations. May God bless you and your family. God bless America. Have a great day and a great weekend. Thank you again for listening to our show. I'm Gary Caligas, wishing you and yours the best of times both today and every day. Have a great day.